This podcast is by G. Wayne Miller for the Providence Journal.
Physicians were such a critical part in starting the epidemic. So part of owning that problem is owning its solution. I wasn't the one who caused the problem, but I am causing the solution as best I can.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So do you want to speak generally about the costs of addiction? And this is Rhode Island-centric, but we'll try to put it in some national context, too.
Well, you know, I think you're right to look at this as a huge issue, as far as costs go, because there are direct costs, right? So there's the healthcare costs from direct patient care for someone being admitted to an emergency department and discharged from an emergency department. Then you have the cost of them being admitted to a hospital and discharged from a hospital. Then you have the medicines that people need. Then you have the doctor visits. Then you have the comorbidities, like the hepatitis C that they might pick up, or other diseases they might pick up. Another larger cost that's still direct patient care cost is for the person who survives an overdose but doesn't get back to a normal cognitive state. So then you have the chronic rehabilitative cost of someone who lives in a rehab facility. Maybe they're ventilator dependent. In other words, they've had some permanent damage to their organs. But one way to look at this is just direct care cost. But there's the other costs that are much larger to the epidemic. The other costs are things like the employment that people missed. In other words, they're no longer having a career, so they lost out on earnings. The culture lost out of the benefit of their productivity. The other cost that's much larger is the family lost the relationship from someone who's now got a chronic disease. I mean, I'm not talking about someone who's passed away, I'm talking about someone who survived. You know, because I don't know how to measure the cost for mom or dad when their adult child now suffers from abuse disorder and now they've lost that relationship but the person's still alive. Then there's the other costs that go along with it too that are, I think, still larger when you get to, like, as a culture, some of the symptoms you see that go on beyond is, like, in other words, what do we have to do as a culture to kind of get us back in that direction? I think to some degree, though, we have to be careful how we look at the addiction epidemic. It's necessarily, like, it isn't necessarily the cause of this, or is it just a symptom of something larger? And what I would suggest is that it's a symptom of something larger. In other words, I think if we look at the addiction epidemic as the addiction epidemic is causing all these costs, one thing we might want to consider is backing up even further and saying, why are so many people suffering from opioid disorder or suffering from addiction? And that gets this larger conversation of we're really becoming a substance culture. And what I mean by a substance culture is, you know, opioid use disorder is something we've talked about the last several years. Cocaine's on the rise. Vaping hit the news recently. Tobacco's been around for as long as we can remember. Alcohol's always been a large issue in our culture. In other words, as a culture, we have a lot of challenges, health-related wise, to various substances. And then it gets back to, why are so many people at risk for a substance exposure? And that's where I would back up to, sometimes these start in childhood. Now, when you talk about childhood trauma, toxic stress, you know, HHS came out with a study last week saying one out of three children has been exposed to an adverse childhood experience, or an ACEs type event. And the more ACEs type events you have, the more likely you're going to have different problems in your life. Opioid use disorder, substance disorder is part of that. And we know that when children have these toxic stress events, it actually physically changes the wiring in their brain that they make them more susceptible to things. And kind of what I'm getting at is, we have broad cultural issues nationally and locally that are feeding into this, you know, crisis, if you will. And what I would suggest to you is that the opioid epidemic is indeed a symptom of larger cultural issues that aren't completely understood yet.
How do we address it?
So let's talk about some common sense strategies that are things to think about. It's like, so a child needs to grow up in a home. That's a key thing, that a child not be homeless. It's important for a child to grow up with a home where there's a child feels loved and that people care about the child. It's important that there's other people besides the parents involved with caring for the child as well. In other words, these type of things that contribute to what's called resilience and helps children to survive. If a child grows up in a home where they witness domestic violence, they experience child abuse, a parent's been incarcerated, these are examples of adverse childhood experiences. And these type of events are very traumatic for a child. They're called toxic stress for a reason. So when we look at strategies that are going to help us from a cultural standpoint, I think the Governor's Task Force is heading in a very positive direction. We're working on prevention. We're working on getting people into recovery, helping people to have plenty of naloxone available through the rescue strategy and the treatment strategy. You know, I work with folks in the prevention angle, and I think to a large degree that's the hardest space to be in, because we're not just trying to prevent you from being exposed to the first opioid prescription, but we're working on that. Because prescription number one is probably the most dangerous prescription for you. But we're talking about strategies to make sure that your healthcare addresses you as best we can. But then we're working on other things with health equity zones, cities that have been approved to work with the community overdose engagement strategy. So these local solutions that look at the social determinants of health is really where the heavy lifting is as far as the epidemic is concerned. And when we're talking about social determinants of health, we're talking about things like safe place to live, job with a decent wage attached to it, a career that matters, having a life with purpose. These are things that address social determinants of health, which are far more important for someone's clinical outcomes over their lifetime than direct patient care. And I think sometimes when we look at healthcare, we think about, well, I went to the doctor and I got the medicine, therefore that was healthcare. But I think what needs to happen as we look at our as a culture, as a state, and as a country is, well, healthcare is well beyond going to the doctor. Healthcare is well beyond getting vaccines. Healthcare is having a safe place to live, having safe roads, having clean water, having good air to breathe, having a culture that's resilient and supportive of people, and a community that cares about each other. These are things that I speak to healthcare. And so if you live in a certain part of Rhode Island and you can't access fresh fruits and vegetables, that interferes with your health care. If you live in any part of the state and we can offer you at least a healthy diet and plenty of exercise and a place to live that's safe, a neighborhood that's safe, that gets to positive health outcomes. Those sound aspirational, but if we don't look at those social determinants of health, then we really have no reason to believe we aren't just going to be reliving the same problem over and over. And when you look at the overdose epidemic as a symptom, I think one of the things that we want to keep in the back of our mind is it's really a symptom of this larger cultural issue. And this is where, you know, the role of public health, you know, I think gets more clear to folks, is that the health department is way more than just counting things. You know, really we're involved with all kinds of things in the Department of Health to try to address how do we get healthy communities so we can have healthy individuals who live here.
What can the average citizen do in terms of what we're talking about? This is a big fix that's needed.
Yeah. I think in our country we've come to live in a microwave mentality where we expect most problems to be solved in a short period of time. And when we see problems aren't solved in a short period of time, there's so many other problems we kind of forget that. Kind of what I'm trying to get to is when you look at cultural issues like the opioid epidemic, I think what's important to keep in mind is that beyond it being a symptom, it's like, you know, what can I do to contribute to that? So one of the things I can do as a dad to contribute to that is, one, be there for my wife and my kids. So put a healthy family together. And whatever your family looks like, just be there for your family, you know, and keep your family healthy a little bit. I think another thing that we can do is, if we're an employer, employ people who are in recovery and not have a bias against them. Everybody needs a second chance, sometimes a third and fourth chance. You know, I think as far as the culture goes, be involved with the community. I'm a soccer coach. You know, that may sound like something small, but part of being a positive role model to kids in my community and being a kind soccer coach and letting kids play soccer is that helps people realize there's other adults who care about me and are gonna say good things about me. And when I coach soccer, by the way, I'm only nice to the kids who play because they're just kids playing a game. In other words, part of what I'm trying to do is be a positive role model in my community. These may sound like three corny things, but I would suggest they're important things. One, being part of a healthy family is something that's active and need to be involved with that. Being an employer who's responsible and takes risks on people in recovery, that's really helpful. Being a positive member of the community and actually getting involved with something that's outside of you, whether it's in your, you know, soccer league or whether it's in your church or something. But these are things that matter. That's part of restoring a community, if you ask me.